32. Far below Earth's surface in drab low-rent Connaught 2A, in the least desirable building of the wide ring of substandard housing surrounding Festung, Washington, D.C., Surly G. Phebs stood at one end of a rickety table at which sat five didascalic individuals, five motley assorted persons, plus himself. But they had, however, been certified by Univox-50R, the official government computer, as able to represent the authentic total trend of West Bloc buying habits. This secret meeting of these six new concomities was so illegal as to beggar description. Rapping on the table, Phebs said shrilly, "The meeting will now come to order." He glanced up and down in a severe fashion, showing them who was in charge. It was he, after all, who had brought them, in the most circumspect manner possible, with every security precaution that a genuine, uniquely clever human mind, his, could devise, together in this one dingy room. Everyone was attentive, but nervous, because God knew the FBI or the CIA or Koch might burst in the door any moment despite the inspired security precautions of their leader, Surly G. Phebs. "As you know," Phebs said, his arms folded, feet planted wide apart, so as to convincingly demonstrate that he was solidly planted here, was not about to be swept away by the hired creeps of any institutional police force. "It is illegal for us six concomities even to know one another's names. Hence, we shall begin this confabulation by reciting our names." He pointed to the woman seated closest to him. Squeakily, she said,
"Martha Raines."
Phebs pointed to the next person in turn.
"Jason Gill."
"Harry Markison."
"Doreen Stapleton."
"Ed L. Jones," the last man at the far end spoke firmly. And that was that. In defiance of the law of West Bloc and its police agencies, they knew one another by name. Ironically, since the emergency had passed, the UN-W NATSEC board now allowed them to enter the Kremlin and officially participate in its meetings. And that's because, individually, Phebs realized as he looked around the rickety table, each of us possesses nothing, is nothing, and the board knows it, but all six of us together. Aloud, he said commandingly,
"Okay, let's begin. Every one of you, when you walked through this door, brought your component of that new weapon, that item 401 they call the molecular restriction beam phase inverter, right? I saw a paper bag or neutral, ordinary-looking plastic carton under everyone's arm, correct?"
Each of the five concomities facing him mumbled a yes, Mr. Phebs, or nodded, or both. In fact, each had placed his package on the table in plain sight as a show of courage. Phebs instructed in a sharp, emotion-laden voice,
"Open them up. Let's see the contents."
With shaking fingers and great trepidation, the paper bags and cartons were opened. On the table rested the six components. When assembled, assuming that someone in this room could accomplish this, they formed the dread new molecular restriction beam phase inverter. Tapes of the TerraWeb in action at Lanferman Associates' huge subsurface proving levels indicated that no defense against it existed, and the entire UN-W NATSEC board, including the six at last allowed in concomities, had solemnly viewed those tapes.
"Our task," Phebs declared, "of rebuilding these components back to form the original TerraWeb falls naturally onto myself. I personally shall take full responsibility. As you all know, the next formal meeting of the board is 1 week from today, so we have less than 7 days in which to reassemble the molecular restriction beam phase inverter item 401.
Jason Gill piped,
"You want us to stick around while you put it back together, Mr. Phebs?"
"You may, if you so desire," Phebs said.
Ed Jones said,
"Can we offer suggestions? The reason I ask that is, see, my job in real life, I mean, before I was a concomity, was standby electrician at GE in Detroit, so I know a little about electronics."
"You may offer suggestions," Phebs decided after some thought.
"I will permit it, but you understand our sacred pact. As a political organization, we are to allow policy to be decided by our elected leader without bureaucratic hampering-type restrictions, correct? Everyone mumbled, correct. Phebs was that unhampered, unbureaucratically restricted elected leader of their clandestine political revolutionary-type organization, which, after long debate, had titled itself menacingly the BOCFDUTCRBASEBFIN, the benefactors of constitutional freedoms denied under the contemporary rule by a small elite by force, if necessary, cell one. Picking up his component and Ed Jones's, Phebs seated himself and reached into the bin of brand new tools with which at great cost the organization had provided itself. He brought out a long, slender, tapered, German-made screwdriver with autonomic clockwise or anti-clockwise rotation action, depending on which way you pressed the plastic handle, and began his work. Reverently, the other five members of the organization watched. An hour later, Surly G. Phebs grunted sweatily, wiping his forehead with his handkerchief as he halted to take a breather, said, "This'll take time. It isn't easy, but we're getting there." Martha Raines said nervously,
"I hope a roving random police monitor doesn't happen to cruise by above surface and pick up our thoughts."
Politely, Jones pointed and said, "I believe that doodad there fits up against that template. See where those screw holes are?" "Conceivably so," Phebs said. "This brings me to something I intended to take up later, but since I'm pausing for a while, I might as well say it to you all now."
He glanced around at them to be sure he had their individual, undivided attention, and then spoke as authoritatively as possible. Given a man of his ability and knowledge, this was very authoritative.
"I want all of you comprising Cell 1 clear in your minds as to the exact type of socio-economic palstruct of society we shall install in place of the undemo-tier by the privileged cog elite which now holds power." "You tell 'em, Phebs," Jones said encouragingly.
"Yeah," Jason Gill agreed. "Let's hear once again. I like this part. What happens after we run him out of office with this item 401?
With superlative calm, Phebs continued.
"Everyone on the UN-W NATSEC board will, of course, be tried as war criminals. We've agreed on that."
"Yeah!
It is Article A in our Constitution. But as to the rest of the cogs, especially those commie bastards in Peep East, that traitor General Nitz is so pally with, like that Marshal Papanovich or whatever his name is, well, like I've explained to you in our past secret meetings down here."
"Right, Phebs."
"They're really gonna get it. They're the worst. But mainly, we have to seize, and I demand absolute obedience on this because this is tactically crucial, we initially must gain control of the entire subsurface installations of Lanfrom & Associates in California, because as we all know, it's from there the new weapons come, like this 401 they stupidly turned over to us for, plow sharing. I mean, we don't want them to build any more of these."
Martha Raines asked timidly,
"And what do we do after we, seize Lanfrom & Associates?"
Phebs said, "Thereupon, we then arrest their hired stooge, that Lars Powder Dry, and then we compel him to start designing weapons for us."
Harry Markison, a middle-aged businessman with a certain amount of common sense, spoke up.
But the weapon by which we won what they're now calling the big war with..."
"Get to it, Markison."
"It, wasn't designed by Mr. Lars Incorporated. Originally, it was some sort of maze invented by some non-cog toy manufacturing outfit, Klug Enterprises. So, don't we have to beware that this Klug fella..."
"Listen," Phebs said quietly. "I'll tell you the real scoop on that. But now, I'm busy."
He then picked up a small Swedish watchmaker screwdriver and resumed the task of reassembling Weapon 401,
He ignored the other five concomities. There was no more time for blabbing. Work had to be done if their blitz-swift coup against the Cog elite was to be successful. And it would be. 3 hours later, with most of the components, in fact all except one fast outlandish gooseneck squash-like gigaw, assembled, ready for all systems go, with Febs wet with perspiration and the other five concomities out of their minds or bored or restless, depending on their natures, there sounded, shockingly, making the room suddenly deathly still, a knock at the door. Laconically, Febs grunted.
I'll handle this.
From the tool bin, he lifted a beautifully balanced Swiss chrome steel hammer and walked slowly across the room past the rigid, pale other five concomities. He unbolted, unfastened, untied the triple-locked door, opened it a crack, peered out into the gloomy hall. A spick-and-span new shiny autonomic Stantmail delivery robot stood there, waiting.
Yes?
Febs inquired. The Stantmail robot whirred. Parcel for Mr. Surly Grant Febs. Registered. Sign here if you are Mr. Febs, or if not Mr. Febs, then on line two instead. It presented a form, pen and flat surface of itself on which to scribble. Laying down the hammer, Febs said, turning briefly to the other five concomities,
It's okay. More tools we ordered, probably.
He signed the form, and the autonomic Stantmail delivery robot handed him a brown paper-wrapped package. Febs shut the door, stood shakily holding the package, then shrugged in courageous defiance. He walked unconcernedly back to where he had been sitting.
You've got guts, Febs,
Ed Jones declared, expressing the sentiments of the group.
I was sure it was an Einsatzgruppe from Koch.
In my opinion, Harry Markison said with overwhelming relief, it looked to be the goddamn Soviet secret police, the KVB. I've got a brother-in-law in Estonia,
Feb said.
They're just not smart enough to pinpoint our meetings. History will deal them out, evolution-wise, to make way for superior forms.
Yeah, Jones agreed.
Like, look how long it took them to come up with a weapon to defeat the alien slavers from Sirius with.
Open the package, Markison said.
In time, Feb said.
He fitted the squash-like gigaw in place and mopped his drenched, steaming forehead.
When do we act, Febs?
Gil asked. They all sat, eyes fixed on Febs, waiting for his decision. Aware of this, he felt relaxed. The pressure was off.
I've been thinking,
Febs said in his most Febsish manner. It had been deep thinking indeed. Reaching out, he picked up the weapon, Terwep item 401, held it cradled, his hand on the trigger.
I required the five of you, he said, because I had to obtain all six components that constitute this weapon. However,
pressing the trigger, he demolecularized by means of the wide-angle setting of the phase inversion beam emanating from the muzzle of the weapon, his fellow five concomities at their seats here and there around the rickety table. It happened soundlessly, instantly, as he had anticipated. The vid and odd tapes from Lanferman Associates, shown to the board, had indicated these useful aspects of Item 401's action. There was now left only Surly G. Febs, and armed with Earth's most modern, fashionable, advanced, soundless, instant weapon, against which no defense was yet known, even to Lars Powderdry, whose business it was to conjure up such things.
And you, Mr. Lars, Febs said to himself, are next.
He laid the weapon down carefully and, with calm hands, lit another cigarette. He regretted that there was no longer anyone in the room to witness his rational, precise movements. Anyone but himself, anyhow. And then, because obviously now he had time to spare, Febs reached out, picked up the brown paper-wrapped package which the autonomic Stantmail delivery robot had brought, and set it directly before him.
He unwrapped it slowly, leisurely, meditating in his infinitely subtle mind on the future which lay so close ahead. He was frankly puzzled by what he found within the wrappings. It was not additional tools. It was nothing he or the now non-existent organization BOCFDUTCRBASEBFIN, Cell 1, had ordered. It was, in fact, a toy. Specifically, he discovered as he lifted the lid of the brightly colored amusing box, it was a product of the marginal toy maker Klug Enterprises, a game of some kind, a child's maze. He felt, immediately, on an instinctive level, because, after all, he was no ordinary man, acute, accurate, intuitive dismay. But not sufficiently acute, accurate, or intuitive enough to cause him to hurl the box aside. The impulse was there, but he did not act on it, because he was curious. Already he had seen that this was no common maze. It intrigued his uniquely subtle, agile mind. It held him gripped, so that he continued to peer at the maze, then at the instructions on the inside lid of the box.
"You are the world's foremost concomity," a telepathic voice sounded in his mind, emanating from the maze itself. "You are Surly Grant Phebs, right?"
"Right," said Phebs.
"It is you," the telepathic voice continued, "who make the primary decision as to the worthwhileness of each consumer commodity newly introduced on the market, right?"
Phebs, feeling a cold bite of caution over his heart, nevertheless nodded.
"Yes, that's so. They have to come to me first. That's my job on the board. I'm the current Concomity A, so they give me the important components."
The telepathic voice said,
"Vincent Klug of Klug Enterprises, a small firm, would therefore, Mr. Phebs, like you to examine this new game, The Man in the Maze. Please determine whether, in your expert opinion, it is ready for marketing. A form is provided on which you may transcribe your reactions."
Phebs said haltingly,
"You mean you want me to play with this?"
"That is exactly what we want. Please, press the red button on the right side of the maze."
Phebs pressed the red button. In the maze, a tiny creature gave a yelp of horror. Phebs jumped, startled. The tiny creature was roly-poly and adorable-looking. Somehow it was appealing even to him, and he normally detested animals, not to mention people. It began to hurry frantically through the maze, seeking the way out. The placid telepathic voice continued,
"You will notice that this product made for the domestic market and soon to be run off in quantity, if it successfully passes such initial tests as you are providing it, bears a striking resemblance to the famous empathic telepath pseudo-non-homo Ludens maze developed by Klug Enterprises and utilized recently as a weapon of war, right?"
Yes.
But his attention was still fixed on the travails of the tiny roly-poly creature. It was having a terrible time, becoming more confounded and more embroiled in the tortured ways and byways of the maze each second. The harder it tried, the deeper it became enmeshed. "And that's not right," Phebs thought, or rather felt. He experienced its torment, and that torment was appalling. Something had to be done about it, and now.
"Hey," he said feebly, how do I get this animal, whatever it is, out?"
The telepathic voice informed him,
"On the left-hand side of the maze, you will find a gaily colored blue stud. Depress that stud, Mr. Phebs."
Eagerly, he pressed it. He felt at once, or imagined he felt, which was it? The distinction seemed to have evaporated. A diminution of the terror surging within the trapped animal. But almost at once, that terror returned, and this time with renewed, even increased severity.
"You would like," the telepathic voice said, "to get the man in the maze out, would you not, Mr. Phebs? Be honest. Let's not kid ourselves. Is this not right?
Right, Phebs whispered, nodding. But it's not a man, is it? I mean, it's just a bug or an animal or something. What is it?
He needed to know. The answer was urgent to him.
Maybe I can lift it out, he thought, or yell to it. Somehow communicate with it so it sees how to get away and that I'm up here trying for its sake. Hey!
He said to the scampering creature as it rebounded from one barrier to the next, as the structure, the pattern of the maze, altered and re-altered, always outwitting it.
Who are you? What are you? Do you have a name?
I have a name, the trapped creature thought back frantically to him, linking itself, its travails with him, sharing its plight with Surly G. Phebs desperately and gladly. He felt himself enmeshed now, not looking down at the maze from above, but seeing the barriers ahead of him, looming. He was the creature in the maze.
My name,
he squealed, appealing to the enormous, not fully understood entity above him, whose countenance, whose presence, he had sensed for a moment, but now who seemed to be gone. He could no longer locate it. He was alone again as he faced the shifting walls on every side.
My name, he squealed, is Surly G. Phebs, and I want to get out. Can you hear me? Whoever you are up there, can you do something for me?
There was no answer. There was nothing. No one above. He scampered on alone.